Hello and welcome to the Inspire Change Summit, presented by Earth is Waking Up. This is your host, Jeremy Anderson. Today we've got a special guest on the line, Mike Mutzel. Mike Mutzel, MS, has a bachelor's degree in cellular biology from Western Washington University and an MS in nutrition from the University of Bridgeport, Connecticut. He has completed the Applying Functional Medicine in Clinical Practice course and all six of the advanced practice modules at the Institute for Functional Medicine. Since 2008, Mike has broadcasted hundreds of webinars and video interviews on the latest integrative health developments and regularly speaks at seminars throughout the U.S., Canada, and Asia. He's the author of Belly Fat Effect, The Real Secret About How Your Diet, Intestinal Health, and Gut Bacteria Help You Burn Fat. Welcome, and thanks for being on the show, Mike.
Jeremy, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, I think that what your book has to bring is real valuable to the listeners, especially anyone that's perplexed by why they can't seem to lose that belly fat or so forth. Can you explain a little more on that? Or?
Yeah, wonderful launching place, Jeremy. You know, I mean, there's so many different facets and little touch points, if you will, that regulate body fat and appetite, satiety. And so, you know, the whole point of Belly Fat Effect was to kind of elucidate, you know, the ways through which we can modify our lifestyle that will impact our body composition. And I was really moved by this, you know, after it was about the time that my wife was pregnant and I started to look up, you know, children's health and looked at the child obesity epidemic and looked at, you know, about 20% of adolescents and children are overweight and about 15% are obese. And so we have a major problem, you know, in the U.S. alone, particularly in North America, a major problem, but 72% of the adults are either overweight or obese. And so, you know, and folks are, it's not like we're just asleep at the wheel and we're not doing anything about it. The last estimate I read was $65 billion annually, just in the U.S. alone, is spent on some sort of weight loss, diet-related
wow.
or surgical-related. Yeah, it's scary. So supplements, liposuction. I mean, it's a lot of money, and we're still trying to figure it out. So I said,
Did you say
what?
$65 million?
It's insane. And this includes bariatric surgery, too, by the way.
Wow.
And so anyway, that's how I got into it, is how I started to learn that there's other things besides calories in, calories out. I was working with an integrative medical doctor, Gerard Guillory, in Colorado. Starting back in 2007, I wanted to go to medical school. I took the MCAT, did all that sort of stuff. And long story short, one of the medical assistants in the clinic, who was morbidly obese, underwent bariatric surgery and didn't change her diet, didn't change her lifestyle, changed nothing in her life,
yeah.
right, outside of getting this surgery. Lo and behold, she lost over 120 pounds, like, boom, like that. Then the weight kept coming and coming off. So I thought, wow, this is really rapid. You know, how is this really working? So I went to at the time I lived in Denver, Colorado, went to the medical school library, and I, you know, was curious about the mechanism of action of bariatric surgery. How does this procedure actually cause such rapid and sustained weight loss? And it turns out it has nothing to do with restricting how much food people eat. It has everything to do with changing the gut hormones, changing the microbiome. And so I was like, holy cow, there's the one and only medical procedure that, again, I'm not a fan of it. I'm just admiring the pharmacokinetics and the biology of the procedure. It's very effective at causing weight loss. So I'm like, what if we could come up with a more natural way to mimic the hormonal response of bariatric surgery? And I found, stumbled upon all this research about the gut microbiome, the gut hormones, leptin, you know, circadian rhythms. I mean, there's so many different aspects that are perturbed in the obese individual, in the overweight individual, that we can manipulate dietarily and environmentally to cause sustained and long-term weight loss. So that was the five-year research journey that became the book Belly Fat Effect, and now I do a lot of webinars and education to help people, and particularly practitioners, understand the touch points that they have at their disposal to recommend novel therapies for weight loss for people.
Wow. Yeah, this sounds somewhat similar to what Dr. Tom was saying yesterday about the microbiome and how big of an impact that has on our overall health. That was 65 to 80% of our immune system is actually contained within the gut, the biome there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great segue, right? And every single thing that we eat, drink, from chewing gum all the way down to antibiotics, pharmaceutical medications, Coca-Cola, the first contact point is the microbiome and the cells that line the intestine, called the enterocytes. And located within and amongst those enterocytes are endocrine cells, these enteroendocrine cells that literally relay messages from the gut to the brain, to the liver, to the pancreas, to all the metabolic organs. And so, I mean, it makes sense. Your gastrointestinal tract is a shipping and receiving center loaded with microbes. And so the stuff that you put in is going to immediately send messages to the rest of the body. Now, here's the situation. A lot of people, they eat mindlessly. They're not chewing their food. They're eating while they're driving their car, or while they're stressed out, or they're watching TV. They're on Snapchat and eating. And so they're not sending the proper messages from the intestine to the rest of the body, and they wonder why they can't lose weight. And so that's tip number one. If people are like, okay, we know the gut's important. What do? When you chew your food in the actual act of mastication, that literally upregulates the release of these, they're called incretin hormones, so GLP-1 and secretin, there's glucagon, there's PYY, there's a whole bunch of these compounds. And let me just pause and let people know that the drug companies are no dummies. The biggest category of research and development right now are synthetic incretin analogs. So these hormones that I mentioned, like GLP-1 and GLP-2 and CCK, the drug companies are creating molecular targets that either upregulate or amplify these messages because they are so powerful. So when we think about type 2 diabetes, when we think about leptin resistance and this craving of hunger and all this sort of stuff, you know, the messages are just not being released properly from the gut. And then the consequence of that is elevated blood sugar after a meal. Then you get all these postprandial, post-meal issues, right? But so the drug companies are going after that. But what's so cool is when you chew your food, you upregulate these hormones properly so that you have better blood sugar control. You have better control over your cravings. You have a reduced anti-inflammatory response. And if you have a higher fat meal, if you have a meal rich in color, phytonutrients from broccoli and ginger and garlic and onions and all these wonderful phytonutrients, those compounds, it turns out, also amplify this chemical message that I've been talking about. These incretin gut hormones become amplified when we have these phytonutrients and also dietary fiber. So things like inulin, chicory, onions, garlic, they have a prebiotic fiber. That prebiotic fiber stimulates these enteroendocrine cells, these metabolic cells in our GI tract, that then communicate to our pancreas, which releases insulin, that communicate to our brain to tell us that we've had food, we don't need to eat any more food, and turn off hunger signals. So there's many touch points, and we haven't even begun to talk about the microbes, but it turns out that the microbes also, in addition to, like Dr. Tom said, a vast majority of our immune system cells are educated and constantly receive messages from the gastrointestinal microbiota, this forgotten organ. Literally just got off an interview with a researcher at Cornell University who studied toxicology for 30 years, and he goes, we have to redo, this is his own words, a Cornell University toxicologist, we have to redo all our toxicology models, all our vaccine models we have to redo. Why? Because they weren't studied in the context of the microbiome. So people, I mean, he interviewed one NIH researcher, and he was talking about, you know, imagine physicians going through medical school and they were never taught about the liver. It'd be like, seriously? The liver controls blood sugar, controls clotting, it affects bile, you know, it makes bile, the liver does everything, right? Well, the microbiome is as metabolically active as the liver. There are 6,300 metabolic and enzymatic functions that the microbiome contributes to us, you know. First, let me just pause right here. So when you think about like smoothies and drinking, you know, eating kale and having juices and all that fiber and all those phytonutrients, if you didn't have those 100 trillion single cell bacteria that we call the microbiome, if you didn't have the microbiome, you wouldn't absorb any of the kale that you ate, from the kale smoothie or the kale juice or the celery juice. Why? Because your body literally can't process. The human genome doesn't contain proteins that make enzymes that can process those phytonutrients and that fiber. That's why we need this symbiotic organism that we call the microbiome. So that's how important they are. It's changing the face of everything that we do. So yeah, step number two, you know, step number three after you chew your food is to choose foods wisely so that think of food not for how it's going to affect your blood sugar, not for how anti-inflammatory or pro-inflammatory it is, or how high glycemic or high calorie, low calorie. Think about how it's going to affect your microbiome. Is it a synthetic sweetener? Okay, that's going to perturb your microbiome in a negative way. Is it a phytonutrient, a fiber? That's probably going to be beneficial for your microbiome. So the more color-rich the compounds are, the healthier they are for your microbiome. And so that's, you know, a big message in the book is really eating for your microbiome. And so that's kind of this new push in immunological health. We talk about autoimmunity. We talk about depression. Whatever the case may be, is eating foods that are really beneficial for those bugs is kind of the biggest. It's the next evolution, particularly when it comes to weight loss.
Yeah. So do you have any sense on, it sounds like what you're saying is that the food we eat only has so much of an impact on the gut health and the microbiome. But what percentage would you say is kind of between the food and other factors? Would you say it's like 80% food and 20% other factors, or do you have any sense?
Yeah, that's a question. You know, I don't know that anyone really knows that answer, but I can share with you some data on animal models where you take a lean mouse and you take bugs, the gut bacteria of an overweight mouse, and inject that rectally into the lean mouse, and they'll get fat, right? So the microbes, now we're more complicated than mice and so forth, so the microbes play a huge role. And so what does that really mean? Well, that means your diet on a daily, ongoing basis needs to properly fuel the microbiome diversity and complexity. So the high fiber, high phytonutrients, limited processed foods or zero, limited synthetic sweeteners and antibiotics, and things that will perturb the microbiome, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, pain medicines, and so forth, we need to make a conscious effort all the time. Now, just because you have quote-unquote dysbiosis or imbalanced gut bacteria doesn't mean you're going to be fat. You know, you can counterbalance that. I mean, there's thermogenesis, there's muscle and the resting metabolic activity and fat burning potential of muscle. And there's a lot of different factors, environmental toxins and hormones and many things. So it's not the end all be all, the microbiome, but it's a very significant factor, as I mentioned. I mean, this organ is more metabolically active as our liver, right? And so, you know, everything that enters our mouth, and particularly that sits in our colon for an extended period of time, is coming into immense contact with this microbial ecosystem. And so we need to start really reframing, you know, what's good for the human, what's good for us. Is this going to lower my cholesterol? And think, okay, how is this going to affect the microbiome? And then how does that ricochet through my body? You know, so it's a different way of kind of thinking about it, you know. And so, for example, you know, we've been taught for a long time that fat is bad for us. And we do know one of the mechanisms through which a high-fat diet actually causes inflammation has nothing to do really with the fat as it enters the bloodstream. And it has everything to do with how it helps to facilitate the absorption of pro-inflammatory bacterial particulate, one of which is known as endotoxin. And so just as a kind of a sidestep here so people get a little context, endotoxin is frequently used in laboratory animals and clinical studies to, when they inject endotoxin, for example, into the brain of mice or humans, it causes depression and manic, you know, anxiety and neurobehavioral complications like almost immediately. So it's very pro-inflammatory. It affects behavior. It increases the body's production of pro-inflammatory signaling molecules like interleukin-6 and TNF-alpha and many, many more. So it's not, we see elevated levels of blood endotoxin in diabetes and heart disease and cancer and every chronic disease you can think of. Well, if you go have a Big Mac and a chocolate shake from McDonald's, guess what? You're going to absorb all these endotoxin particles from gram-negative bacteria in your GI tract and cause an inflammatory response in your body. So again, it's not really the high quote-unquote calories. It's not that the fat is clogging your arteries like we used to think. It's that the fat is inadvertently absorbing bacterial components, which are directly pro-inflammatory in our body, which turn on all these signaling pathways and molecules and networks of inflammation that is linked with these diseases, you know. And so that's kind of what we're trying to say is, get people to understand how that works. So if you do have a cheat meal, if you do have a big piece of chocolate cake, you know, after that follow my work and stuff, I always recommend having curcumin or garlic or resveratrol with that, because when you have these phytonutrients, these color-rich compounds, with a high-fat processed meal, again, not promoting processed food, but people are going to be people, right, and enjoy life and have birthdays and celebrations, that you have these phytonutrients along with the rye, because that will minimize their deleterious effects in your body.
Yeah, can you list those again, the beneficial ones that we can supplement the foods with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the main ones in research is curcumin, resveratrol,
like turmeric.
Taro still bean. So this one's a little different. It's a silent P, but it's P-T-E-R-O still bean. Taro still bean. That's one. There's vitamin D. There's a whole bunch of others, but the most widely studied are going to be those phytonutrients and also fiber. So fiber from things like radicchio, endive, any bitter compound, any bitter, leafy type compounds, spinach and arugula, things like that. Those phytonutrients and fiber in there actually can mitigate this pro-inflammatory effect. And it's, if people want to nerd out and kind of take a deep dive into it, it's known as metabolic endotoxemia. And you can Google image metabolic endotoxemia into Google, and literally you'll probably see some of the charts that I created through a medical illustrator. But there's other charts out there that showed this phenomena. And so it's a new way of looking at how a poor lifestyle causes disease. And so it gives people a better understanding about how to mitigate that or offset that.
Wow. You sound like a wealth of knowledge and information on this stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've read a lot of stuff, but you're just spitting this stuff out like it's the language you speak. So what would you say are some ways that you could speak to that we could do to improve our microbiome? It sounds like those are some things we can do we can add when we eat those things. But what about in general? Yesterday, Dr. Tom was talking about some fermented vegetables and so forth, things to help improve the, the microbiome.
I think that's a great launching place. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that, you know, just kind of back up a little bit. I mean, all this stuff, you can really get complicated and scientific and all that sort of stuff, but the solutions are pretty simple. So, you know, to kind of summarize where we're at, I mean, literally just chewing your food can improve your microbiome diversity and quality. And that chewing food really helps is because it helps digestion. And there's a compound that we're kind of learning more about called bile. And people have probably heard about their gallbladder. It stores these bile acids. They're much like soap, you know, in laundry detergent. They help to kind of literally saponify or make fats more into these mucil compounds. But bile is very antimicrobial. So we hear a lot about SIBO and small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and a lot of studies are actually showing that when you give bile salts to someone with overgrowth of bad bacteria, that it can help to normalize the bacterial composition in their GI tract. So how do we increase bile? I mean, certainly you can go out and buy all these supplements, but why not do it naturally? And one natural way to do that is just simply chewing your food and eating in a mindful state. And so I encourage all the clients that I work with to take 15 to 20 minutes per meal. So sit down, make a ritual. Don't slam a protein shake in the car just before you go to work or something. You know, really take time out of your day to refuel your body. So that's step number one. Why? Again, because it increases bile. It increases these digestive enzymes and so forth. You know, if you have maybe you're eating a paleo diet and you have a 5-ounce piece of T-bone grass-fed meat, whatever. But if you're not chewing that properly, guess what happens? It's going to be maldigested and putrefy and create secondary compounds that are very toxic to bacteria and also the colonocytes, the cells in the colon. So that's why we do see research that is suggesting that high meat diets may be problematic, and that could be one of the mechanisms due to this putrefaction of protein. So I like, and then to kind of add on to what Dr. Tom was talking about with fermented foods, I think that's awesome. There's kefir water, kefir grains, kombucha. You know, there's a lot of great books about how to make fermented foods. And if you travel internationally, like you mentioned in the introduction there, Jeremy, I go to Asia quite a bit. In Korea, for example, before and after every meal, there's kimchi. And I talk with the physicians that I work with and coordinate with out there, and we talk about this stuff, like the increase in childhood obesity and gut bacteria and metabolic endotoxemia, all these topics that we've been talking about. And literally the words out of their mouth, I just asked them. I didn't even plant the seed. I said, well, what do you think about kimchi as a tool? And they said, you know what is really interesting, Mike? The patients that they see that have overweight children, they don't eat kimchi in the house. Or if they do, they actually, it used to be such that in Korean and Asian cultures and so forth, that these fermented foods were made by the grandparents living in the house. And so these Asian cultures are shifting more towards a Western culture where all the parents are working. The grandparents are not living in the house or going to, you know, facilities and centers and so forth. And so they're not making these traditional foods. And so they're seeing a shift in their physiology that's manifesting towards increased risk of disease. So we talked about how, you know, that people are buying store a lot. It's a common trend to just buy kimchi from the grocery store, which, of course, is not of the same quality. It's not fermented as long. It doesn't have the same bacteria. And so it's very interesting, like, getting into a habit of having fermented foods in the house and all the benefits of that, you know, from the different microbes. The other route of getting good microbes is through the soil. So, you know, one thing, I mean, if you go to a plant shop and you buy a bag of soil amender or fertilizer, you get 250 billion CFUs like per tablespoon. Or it's incredible, right? So, you know, just growing some broccoli or kale, or even if you live in Manhattan and you have just small little space, to grow something and get some of these soil amenders that have good bacteria in them, and don't be scared if you get a little dirt in your salad. And so we have a lot of vegetables in our house that we grow. We have 7 4x8 garden beds in the back, and you know, again, I didn't grow up on a farm, I know nothing about this, but I encourage everyone to do this because you reconnect with food and reconnect with nature in a different way. Exercise. So it's really interesting. When you exercise, you actually increase the diversity of the microbes in your body and actually increase one species. This was a study in the UK in rugby players. They found that high-intensity exercise increases one particular genre and species of bacteria called Acromyngia eosinophilia. And this bacteria loves mucus. And so it can help to break down biofilms and which, you know, biofilms can actually lead to, like, stagnant digestion and, like, bacterial colonies. And overall, they're generally not a good thing. And so this bacteria actually breaks that stuff down. And no kidding, just exercising actually helps to increase levels of this particular type of bacteria, which is, if there's two bacteria that you want elevated, or I should say three, you want this Acromyngia eosinophilia. Another one is Fecobacterium prysnitzii. This is like a... ecologists talk about forests and stuff like that, and like you need like a couple of really big tall trees because their root system, their shade, their protection from the wind, like it stabilizes the entire forest. And if you tear that tree down or a clear cut, the soil goes to crap, the forest basically crumbles apart, right? And so yeah. This Fecobacterium prysnitzii is like the tall tree. And so I had literally a microbiologist researcher in China who does a lot of research. He explained it to me that way. He's done some human clinical trials on eating diverse foods and whatnot. And he says this tall tree, this Fecobacterium prysnitzii, is like a keystone species of bacteria in the GI tract. And so how do you increase it? Well, he's found a diverse array of fiber and phytonutrients. And so interestingly, he's not anti-gluten. He thinks whole grains are beneficial, you know, and maybe in China they don't use the glyphosate and hybridization techniques that we use here in the United States and North America. But so anyway, yeah, the diversity in food, chewing your food, trying to get a little soil microbes and stuff like that by growing your own food, I think are some of the top strategies to increase that diversity.
Yeah, so what about aquaponics? Do you have any sense on that? How, because there's no soil involved, it's just all in the water, but... from what I've seen, the plants grow amazing, but I'm curious now about the enzymes that would be in the soil what's in the water and how that might affect it. Are you familiar with aquaponics?
I'm familiar, in principle. I don't.
I think we're losing you. A little choppy. You there? Mike, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, it's just for, must have been losing signal.
There.
Oh, heard a little something.
Yeah, I'm back now. Hello?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Still there?
Okay, cool. Yeah, so we're back. So you're still getting the fiber. You're still getting the phytonutrients. Yeah, with but bacteria. Where your foods are coming from. So much mentioned a couple different ways to do it.
I think we're still just catching little bits and pieces. There you are. Is there a way to get better reception?
I didn't know I had that.
Huh. Yeah, I think we're getting bits and pieces. You wouldn't happen to have a landline that you could call right back, do you?
No, I don't actually. I don't have a landline.
Okay. Okay, I think we're hearing you better now. A little bit.
Great. Okay, where do you
want to
pick up?
Okay, where were we? let's see. How about, so we were talking about some ways to improve the microbiome, fermented foods, kefir, kombucha, so forth, exercise, anything else of note other than relaxing and eating mindfully?
Yeah, great question there, Jeremy. You know, the one thing that's being explored in a lot of practitioners, one where people are in the Pacific Northwest, there's a Dr. Davis that is doing fecal microbiota transplantation, so she's stool transplant. So I think we're going to see more of that, where basically you take an enema of someone else's, not their full stool, but they're going to spin the stool down, and it's called the supernatant. And so we'll see more of that, but you really want to know who the donor is and that sort of thing. you know, stress reduction, I mean, being stressed out literally increases the fecal microbiota count. So you're literally pooping out more bacteria when you're stressed. So that's another thing. And but you know, and so the bacteria are really important, but also the environment, right? Like the ecology of it and how permeable or impermeable or not permeable your intestinal lining is also affects how the microbes in there are affecting your body. So things like alcohol consumption, late night eating, being overly stressed, overexercise, traveling, you know, pharmaceutical drugs, various drugs, anti-inflammatory medications are the biggest category of known compounds that affect gut permeability and acid suppressant medications. So being mindful of things that you're doing in your life that can affect your gut wall, because that will in turn affect how those bacterial fragments, like Jeremy, we talked earlier about endotoxin, lipopolysaccharide, uh-huh. Also known as endotoxin, but there's many more fragments and bacterial cell wall components that induce inflammation that affect our appetite, that cause us to feel depressed and anxious. So just being mindful that your gut wall is one cell thick. I mean, we've all had a paper cut before or deeper cuts. And keep in mind, your skin, the epidermis, is 7 layers thick. 7 cell layers. That's a lot, right? And so we know how easy it is to get a paper cut. I mean, you touch your mail the wrong way and you have a cut, right? Well, think about your 4 GI tract. It's one cell. That's it. And it needs to be selectively permeable in that way so that you can absorb nutrients but also eliminate bad things. And so if your gut layer was 7 layers thick, you probably wouldn't absorb very much nutrients. So you'd have an issue there.
Yeah.
So that's an important aspect of this whole discussion, because when we think about diseases like type 2 diabetes or obesity, we don't think of, oh, is obesity linked with leaky gut? Well, guess what it is? And I wrote about that a lot in the book. And so that's another thing, is like if you're trying to lose weight or you have blood sugar issues or, you know, your weight bounces all around, you know, how is your gut health? What are you doing to improve the integrity of that gastrointestinal tract? Are you avoiding things like Dr. Tom probably talked about yesterday, like gluten and dairy and corn and synthetic sweeteners and these compounds that have known effects on the gut wall, gut barrier?
Yeah. What about GMOs? What can you say about that and how that affects it?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the reason why these crops are mostly being genetically modified, right, is so that they can absorb and tolerate more pesticides and more herbicides, you know, and so that they can tolerate these chemicals. And so, you know, you're getting compounds that have a higher level of pesticides and herbicides that we know are toxic. So that's one aspect. We also know that glyphosate, you know, and it has D4-2 and other compounds. You know, these chemical companies are constantly trying to change things around because, you know, the bacteria and the pests are
evolving, you know, and can tolerate higher and higher levels of these compounds. And I think definitely avoiding GMO foods is that's why we grow our own food, you know, because foods that we love, like strawberries and cucumbers and zucchini, are sprayed very heavily. Raspberries, we love raspberries, and they're so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, foods that you love to eat, and especially if they're on the Environmental Working Group's Dirty Dozen, you know, don't get conventionally raised foods and avoid GMO at all costs. But, you know, the problem is glyphosate and its associated compounds, the surfactants. So check this out. It's really scary stuff. I mean, if you look at glyphosate, you know, it's not just that glyphosate is bad, but it also has these surfactant compounds that help it to penetrate the cell wall. Well, guess what? Those compounds penetrate your own cell walls as well, so they can cause gut permeability. They can puncture the cell wall components of bacteria and beneficial yeast. And so, yeah, this stuff, I mean, it's a big experiment. And the real problem is, it's, even if you avoid glyphosate, even if you avoid GMO foods, it's in the air. It's in the water. You know, a study in Mississippi just did a sample of random rainwater. It was loaded with glyphosate. So it's we need to detox on a daily basis. I don't think there's a human being on planet Earth that shouldn't be thinking about ways to induce sweating, to increase elimination, bowel movements, because all these things really, we need to be expelling these compounds. Because even if you're eating the cleanest, healthiest diet, you're still getting exposed. I mean, polar bears in Antarctica, you know, have this stuff in their bloodstream. So do you.
Wow. One of the things I read at one point that stuck in my mind is eating enough of the GMO foods with the glyphosate and, well, even just GMO, but even wheat that's non-GMO but is doused with glyphosate right before it's harvested, basically what it does is turns our microbiome, our intestinal tract, into a portable pesticide factory, killing off all the beneficial bacteria that we have to digest our food. So at that point, we start to have nutritional deficiencies because we're not able to absorb the nutrients from the food that we eat. It just passes through.
Wow. Yeah, scary stuff here. I mean, man, you know, everyone needs to take their action and pay the extra money, you know, and get organic food, support a local organic farmer, you know, do the community shared agriculture, CSA route. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, it's just a, it's not just like for healthy people and weirdos and hippies. It's for anyone that wants to prevent disease.
It's not a fad. It's actually something that's really important for us in the food system that we're living in right now. Huh?
Right.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I've got a question from a listener here. Are there any easy ways to reverse the cortisol levels?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, a couple things that come to mind. I mean, it's just like we're rethinking metabolism and immunology, like we talked about on this call, with all that we're learning about the microbiome. And we're also rethinking adrenal fatigue. And for a long time, it was taught that the adrenal glands, they just kind of burn out, you know, just like a candle, when you blow it out, it's kind of done. But we realize that that doesn't really happen with any other organ or tissue in the body outside of the ovaries, you know, in women and maybe the testicles in men and so forth. But, you know, the adrenal glands, they get circadian mal-aligned. And so what we see is, you know, everything oscillates in a circadian rhythm, just like the sun rises in the morning and sets at night. You know, leptin rises throughout the day and then is highest while we're sleeping, and testosterone's highest in the morning and gets lower throughout the day, and cortisol's highest in the morning and so forth. And so what happens is all this exposure to artificial light, like cell phones and iPads and computers and even street lights, perturb our body's circadian rhythms. And so we have cortisol being high when it shouldn't be high, or leptin being high when it shouldn't be high, and so forth. And so what I like to encourage people to do is just to reset your body's circadian rhythm. So first thing in the morning, get some natural sunlight. So even if it's dark, even if it's winter and it's you know, cloudy, just get outside and get yourself exposed first thing in the morning. And then the hour before bed, turn out, you know, start using lava lamps or candles. I wear blue light blocking glasses, the UVX glasses I bought on Amazon. There's the Swanwick glasses you can find. So just make sure that you're really treating. So it's not just about getting 8 hours of sleep. It's about sleep hygiene before you go to bed, and then the proper entrainment of your circadian rhythm first thing in the morning. So that can be a great way to help to, you know, kind of retrain the body's circadian rhythm so that you're releasing cortisol when it should be released. And then secondarily, if you're still having issues managing stress, so physiologically, psychologically, which we all need to do, and who's not stressed these days, is I love meditation. Insight meditation is an easy mindfulness, kind of a compassion-based technique. You just go to insightmeditation.com. You can learn more about it and find a center in your area, or learn online. There's a tricycle.org is a magazine that kind of has some different free teachings and stuff like that. HeartMath, again, another mind-body-based tool that's really phenomenal. So those are some of the things that I would recommend right away. There's a lot of supplements that we can talk about too, but yeah, I like to make sure people are doing the lifestyle stuff first and then dive into the supplements a little bit later.
Wow. So much great and helpful information. I'm guessing you probably cover a lot of this in your book, Belly Fat Effect. We hadn't talked much about that yet, I guess, but I'm figuring we're probably covering some bases pretty good here. But is there anything else you could say about the book?
Well, thanks, Jeremy. You know, if people want to dive more into this, you know, and learn more practical how-tos, and, you know, one thing we probably don't have time to talk about right now is, you know, the role of muscle and mitochondrial health and why exercise and movement is so beneficial for us and so forth. So that's one thing I talk about in the book a lot. And then, you know, the whole circadian rhythm thing, like I mentioned, that's a huge component of Chapter 8 in the book, the gut hormones. And just strategies, what to do. I have a little, you know, question type thing. I mean, who should work on their microbiome? You know, I mean, I have a little, I think 16 questions. You know, were you breastfed? Were you delivered, you know, birthed via C-section or natural vaginal delivery? Antibiotics, family size, grow up on a farm. I mean, all these little variables can help people to understand, you know, it's not as objective as, you know, getting a stool specimen tested. But if you want to save yourself some money, you can kind of figure out, you know, the diversity empirically of your microbiome by kind of asking yourself these questions or asking a family member. And then so, you know, if they have diabetes, if they have autoimmunity, if they have depression, you know, and the medicines and all these things are not working, then, you know,
it might be time to look at the microbiome and look at circadian rhythms and all that. So, yeah, that's kind of a quick summary of the book. I have some free videos. If people want to go to bellyfateffect.com, they can learn a little bit more about that as well.
Great. Okay, so to listeners, if you go down on our the website, earthiswakingup.com/Mike, you can click through to the to see his offer or the link to his book on Amazon, Belly Fat Effect. And as it said, well, you'll see it shows on there, and like Mike said, it's got videos, stuff that can help you kind of take charge of your own health and start figuring out and taking the steps to get that back in place. Any final words on the book, Mike?
Jeremy, no, that's it. You know, I do have a YouTube channel, High Intensity Health, so people want to watch more of your videos, they can check that stuff out there. But I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, and thanks for the great questions, and looking forward to helping people out if they're interested in learning more.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks to the listeners, and thanks for sending questions. And remember, live events, you can send in questions, and we may select those and ask them online so you can get an immediate answer. Thanks to all. Much love. Talk to you next time.